Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, two of Iowa's premier performance arts venues are under pressure from the pandemic and from budget cuts. We'll talk about the future of C.Y. Stevens in Ames and Hanscher Auditorium in Iowa City. But first, a nice meal, a friendly atmosphere, maybe a little dancing. Supper clubs have been part of Midwestern culture for many decades, and although they're not all gone, the ones that remain feel a little like relics from a bygone era. Travel writer Megan Bannister has just published a history of these unique establishments. Her book is Iowa Supper Clubs, and over the next half hour, we would love to hear from you. Share your memories of your favorite supper clubs, past and present. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Megan Bannister is with me now. Hello, Megan.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. And tell me what got you interested in supper clubs.
So I had been to supper clubs in Wisconsin and just kind of loved the history of them, that they kind of had been these places that maybe were private or public or were just, such a fun place for people to spend a night out, and didn't initially realize that Iowa had kind of their own take on supper clubs until I started working on this project and realizing that basically anyone I talked to had a story about their local supper clubs. And while in Wisconsin, they're on lakes and kind of more of a woodsy atmosphere, a lot of them here were kind of the heart of small towns or rural highways or those kinds of places. And so really just finding that, yeah, there were so many, and basically every community in the last, 40 or 50 years had had one, even if they maybe didn't anymore. And so just really hearing all of those stories, and then obviously the really good food as well.
Well, and let's talk about what makes an establishment a supper club. And you do not give a definitive definition in your book, but that's because there really is no definitive definition, right?
Right. No, there really isn't. And it's funny just to kind of think through, like, okay, what really makes it? Is it a lot of them have relish trays. So the crudité vegetables. There's a few in Iowa that have, different versions of a cheese spread, that kind of thing. Like, is it having a relish tray?
Well, and we could dig down a little deeper on the relish trays here for just a moment.
Yes.
Because when I hear the term relish tray, I do think of vegetables. And a lot of these relish trays are like piles of onion rings and other fried things that'll just get you through
so
until
totally
the meal
depends.
Comes, right?
Yeah, so it totally depends on which one you're at. So Sudrel Supper Club near Cedar Rapids, theirs comes with some veggies, but also comes with onion rings and fried chicken gizzards. There's places in Dubuque that theirs are more just like spreads and crackers. So you'll get like a liverwurst spread and a cheese spread. And then there's some that are truly mostly vegetables and maybe some cheese cubes. So even that is a wide variety of things that you could expect on a relish tray. It's kind of the heart of what supper clubs are, is there's sort of a baseline, but then everyone has their own take on what makes it a supper club. So a lot of them you'll find prime rib specials, especially in Iowa. You might have some fish specials on Fridays, especially. Lots of classic cocktails, so old fashions are really big, really large portions typically, and probably not too many vegetarian or vegan-friendly options. It's usually pretty meat-heavy in terms of entrees.
So they are kind of like a steakhouse.
Yes.
But the atmosphere is an important part of this. They're not all alike, but there was and still is for a lot of them kind of an elegance to the establishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So they don't have to have music and dancing, but a lot of them did and some of them still do, right?
Yep. Yeah, a lot of them, most of them did. And a lot of them started as either kind of like roadside, like roadhouses, and then kind of got fancier or more exclusive with prohibition and stricter liquor laws. And so at least a good portion of the ones that are closed, and then a few of the ones that are still open today, started as key clubs. So you would essentially pay a fee to have access to the restaurant and pay to have your bottle of liquor there so that you could get a drink with your dinner, because Iowa didn't get liquor by the drink until much later than a lot of other places in the country. So you could go out to dinner, but you couldn't necessarily, you know, have a cocktail with your dinner legally.
All right.
So that's how a lot of them started.
Right. That's where the sort of members only feel comes from.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But most supper clubs are not members only and haven't been for decades and decades. Although I think some people still wonder, is it okay if I go in there?
Yes. No, that's one of the biggest questions I got from people while I was working on the book was if they were still private and if you could just go there. All of the ones that are in the book and that still exist today are completely open to the public, so anyone can go. There's not kind of in the past, they were maybe fancier, more special occasions, more formal dress. That for the most part isn't the case really either. You can certainly, they still have plenty of, you know, weddings and family parties and reunions and things like that that might be fancier occasions. But for the most part, they're a little more casual now.
All right. And you mentioned the rural nature of a lot of supper clubs, but that's not part of the definition either, because, for example, Cedar Rapids is home to a few mm-hmm. supper clubs. Des Moines had supper clubs really in the heart of the city.
Absolutely. Yeah. So even that is a kind of a contradiction. There are still a few that are more rural or more remote, but a lot of them, for the most part, were on sort of the main highways that would have been kind of how you're passing through. So Cedar Rapids, both of their supper clubs that still exist are on kind of the rural main highways that maybe before the major interstate was there, was the way that people were passing by. And that was just the way they got a lot of their business, is people who were either locals and were looking for a place to go, or who were traveling and maybe needed a good meal until they continued on.
All right. Well, let's dig into the history of these restaurants. And really, although we think of them as Midwestern, you start with the history of a restaurant in California.
Yeah. So trying to pin down kind of where supper clubs started is about as tricky as trying to define them. And so there is one that was in California that actually was started by a man from Wisconsin that is most places attributed as the first supper club, but there's also lots of Wisconsin supper clubs or things that I think would fall into the definition of supper clubs that existed before that one opened that he probably got inspiration from. But that was easily the most popular one. And then you kind of just see them continue to spring up in the upper Midwest, Wisconsin especially, Minnesota, Iowa, and Illinois.
And he was also the inventor of Lowry's Seasoned Salt?
He is, yes. So you will find that at quite a few of the supper clubs in the book and kind of keeps his legacy going there that way.
A cuisine-shaking revelation, Lowry's Seasoned
Absolutely.
Salt, for sure. You are welcome to join the conversation. We're going to be talking more about supper clubs over the next 15 or 20 minutes, and we'd love to hear from you with your memories. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. With me, Megan Bannister, author of Iowa Supper Clubs, and Todd is on the line in Davenport. Hello, Todd.
Good morning, Charity.
Hi.
My Uncle Harold Rao owned a supper club in Davenport, Iowa in the 70s when I was a kid, and it was called the Tick Tock, and his specialty was barbecue ribs with a secret sauce and catfish. And he had his own songbook. It was American Standard songbook that he had with the organ player every night. And he would put on little shows and sing to people. And on the weekends, he would have like trios and little bands, big band kind of things going on. And he had these kiddie cocktails for the kids. So they, you know, like they were drinking. And it was an awesome time, a family-oriented thing. And then once a year he would have a fish fry at his house, and hundreds of people would come to this thing.
Oh wow,
it was an awesome time.
Yeah, it sounds like you have some pretty incredible memories. Did you spend a lot of time at the restaurant?
A lot of time. He was a great singer. He's a big tall guy, 6'6", and he had an awesome voice and very loved in the community.
When did the restaurant close, Todd?
I think it was the late 70s. He became managers of different clubs around the community, of different restaurants. But he sold it out, and his secret recipe was part of the deal when he sold it to another restaurant owner. And it, I guess it enhanced the price.
Oh, wow. And is there still a place where you can taste that secret recipe, or is that gone by the wayside too?
I think it's gone by the wayside, and the supper club is now a dentist's office.
Oh, Todd, thank you so much for sharing that. But Megan, that sounds like a quintessential supper club.
It really does.
So in your research, you found a lot of supper clubs that had disappeared, but Iowa also has supper clubs that are still alive and thriving. We only have about a minute before the break, but can you give me a kind of an idea in the overview, how many supper clubs do we still have left?
Yeah, we still have about a dozen around the state. They're a little more stretched east, to the east end of the state, and then centrally. But there is one in Lamar's, Iowa. There's a few in northern Iowa. And since even I finished working on this, there's been a few that have reopened in different capacities. So White Springs Supper Club in McGregor had been closed for a long time, and the granddaughter of the original owner reopened it earlier this year. And then in Iowa City, actually, the Highlander Supper Club, which was a popular favorite, is reopening as a boutique hotel, kind of paying homage to that era and to the supper club. So there's about a dozen, and it's exciting to see that there might be even more than that, hopefully in the coming year or so.
Although I can imagine this is a difficult time for supper clubs, as it is a difficult time for restaurants everywhere. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I'm talking with Megan Bannister. She is the author of Iowa Supper Clubs. We're talking about the history of these unique institutions, and we'd love to hear your memories. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are talking about supper clubs. Coming up later this hour, we'll also talk about the future of some of Iowa's premier performing arts venues, C.Y. Stevens Auditorium in Ames and Hancher Auditorium in Iowa City. Both are under pressure because of budget cuts at their home institutions, Iowa State University and the University of Iowa. But a little more fun topic right now, supper clubs with Megan Bannister. She just published the book, Iowa Supper Clubs. And Megan, in trying to research the history of some of the supper clubs that have disappeared, did you find that it was easy to find information about them?
I would say it was easy to find people who had memories of them and to find kind of the names and maybe the closest small town. But in terms of digging up information and kind of a history of the ones that maybe don't exist anymore and don't have as much of a family presence even in that town, it was a little trickier. So it was a lot of newspapers.com research and a lot of talking to local historical societies and trying to figure out, you know, is there an uncle or cousin or someone who had anything from these supper clubs and could tell me a little bit more about it that way. But a lot of them, even the buildings aren't there anymore. So talking about, you know, now the supper club is a dentist's office, that is very true of a lot of them. They've been either converted into things or just completely demolished and don't even exist on the map anymore.
You wrote about some of the supper clubs with more, I guess, colorful histories, and you shared the memories of some of the people who used to go there. Can you pick one or two and tell us about some of the supper clubs that have disappeared?
Yeah. So in Marquette, there was actually the Pink Elephant Supper Club. And that's kind of a fun one if you're in Marquette, which is the eastern part of the state along the river. You can still go and see Pinky the Elephant that used to be in front of the supper club. And so that one is now in front of the Casino Queen right there on the river. But it's a giant pink elephant. And that supper club started in the 1960s. And they were open for quite a bit. Kind of expanded. They were one of the ones that also had a motor lodge motel as part of the property, which wasn't wholly uncommon for a lot of them. Since they were on rural highways, a lot of them, were attracting travelers. And then if they could offer them a place to stay, they were more likely to also probably eat there. But they actually, the owners of that supper club in the 1970s, President Jimmy Carter was visiting the area, and they actually put the elephant on water skis because he was on a boat tour and followed it around the boat tour. So that's kind of a fun anecdote from that one. And you can still go see at least the pink elephant that was part of that back in the day.
Oh, wow. And we have already a number of other people joining with their memories. 866-780-9100. Tim is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Tim. Hello, Tim.
Hi. Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
So I recall visiting Lake Robbins, and I'm not sure if it's even still open, but I always loved seeing the Iowa State University students get up and extend their arms and take their co-eds out and put on a show. While at the front door, the woman that was taking the tickets was the same individual that was taking tickets in, I believe, 1939. Interested in the comments and if it made the book, and I'll hang up and listen on the radio here.
All right, Tim, thanks a lot for your call. Megan, does that one ring a bell?
I don't think so. There's so many, though. It's funny just over the years how a lot of them even changed names or changed owners and kind of grown and evolved, and even just the memories people have of them. Finding, what the actual name was sometimes was even tricky.
Well, and we talked about how the definition of supper club is a little bit loosey-goosey, and supper club is not always included in the name of the restaurant.
Correct, yeah.
So the supper clubs that are still around, how do you find them, given that you probably can't just Google supper clubs in Iowa and find a comprehensive list?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of them were crowdsourced from people who either, know of them locally. Luckily, some of them do still have supper club in the name, so that was easier. But for the ones that still exist, they are at least still popular enough that they're drawing a crowd from around. So finding, Northwestern Steakhouse in Mason City that routinely has people drive down from Minneapolis because they have such a strong following after being there for 100 years. So identifying the ones that were still open was actually much easier because people from those areas are so passionate about them that they frequent them all the time.
Well, and one of the things that a lot of these supper clubs have in common is that they don't take reservations. So if you're going to drive down from the Twin Cities, you also have to be prepared to stand in line, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The Northwestern Steakhouse, they open, I believe, at 4:30 under normal times. I think they're doing carryout only right now. But they typically would open around 4:30, and it wasn't unusual for them to have people waiting in line outside starting at 3 p.m. on a Saturday.
Wow.
Because they only see about 50 people at a time. And yeah, if you don't get in time, then you're out of luck for dinner that night.
And people still come and they wait, and that's part of the
mystique. Absolutely. Yeah, that's the whole part of the thing. And, in other times, most of them have a bar. So, going, putting your name in, getting a seat at the bar and having a few cocktails and maybe some onion rings is kind of part of the whole thing while you wait for your table to be ready.
Let's go back to the phones. Marilee is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Marilee.
Hi. Years ago, I bought a coffee table book about supper clubs, and I had parents who traveled the upper Midwest going to visit them. So they were a big part of my childhood. I didn't get to go, but they always brought home neat leftovers. I just wanted to bring up how wonderfully one of the local supper clubs has done throughout the pandemic. I live in Cedar Rapids, And the lighthouse has been here since 1912 and has all the stories about Capone and Dillinger going through there. It has been the place during the pandemic for people to have an anniversary or a special dinner. This supper club made the switch and was doing curbside pickup and has been throughout this while the restaurants were closed. And I can't tell you how many people I know that was the biggest thrill there, you know, during the pandemic, to be able to get that great supper club dinner and to be able to bring it home when we all had to be quarantined. And for a restaurant that's over 100 years old, I want to applaud them for their keeping up with the modern demands, even in this time of COVID.
Oh, that's great. Marilee, no, stay with us, because Megan, you wrote about the Lighthouse Inn Supper Club. And Marilee, you just sort of tossed off this history of Al Capone coming through and things like that. I mean, this is a pretty storied supper club. Megan, anything else we should know about this institution?
Yeah, it absolutely is. So there is a chapter in the book about the lighthouse. And yeah, like Marilee said, it was a pretty common hangout for Al Capone and John Dillinger. Al Capone, mainly because, as one of the former owners told me, he refused to drive on gravel roads because he was worried that his car would get stuck. And so he stopped there frequently when he was trying to get out of Chicago, trying to lay low for a little bit. And then John Dillinger also was a frequent diner there because he had family in Cedar Rapids. So he would come and visit them, eat at the lighthouse. And one of the former owners even told me that one time Al Capone had left a car in the parking lot that was there for an amount of time that they finally had to get it towed. And when they opened up the trunk to get it towed, they found a whole bunch of his firearms in the trunk. And so he thought for a while they might have been on display somewhere, but he wasn't sure anymore. So, yeah, very, very storied. There used to be a bullet hole in one of the walls as well that I think has since been covered up with renovations from, I think, when John Dillinger's gun had gone off during dinner at some point, too.
Wow. Well, it sounds like an incredible treasure. Marilee, thank you so much for calling.
I have a quick question Megan then. There was actor Don Ameche. His brother owned a restaurant in the area. Was that the Lighthouse?
It was, yes. He owned it briefly.
Okay.
And then I think ended up selling it back to one of the newer owners.
Okay, because, yeah, I thought it had the actor's connection there, but I wanted to verify with you. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks for the information.
Nope, you're correct.
Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dennis in Iowa City says that his parents, on rare occasions, let him accompany them to the Kit Kat Club on Waterloo's west side near John Deere. It was amazing. A small place with relish trays, fabulous steaks, African-American jazz musicians, and, of course, thick cigarette smoke enveloped the whole place. That does sound like a quintessential experience. And Megan, Todd, when he called, talked about the family-friendly environment of the TikTok in Davenport, but not all of these establishments really had a reputation for being family-friendly. Give me an idea of the vibe.
Yeah, I think for the most part, a lot of them were kind of like Marilee said, like it was the place that your parents went out for a fancy meal and left you at home and you maybe got the leftovers. So a lot of them did have live music and dancing. There's some in Iowa that back in the day had slot machines and gambling and, liquor by the drink before that was legal. And so they really were kind of the place for a fancy night out. If you were there on a Friday or Saturday, there was still, I think probably if you were maybe a kid in the heyday of supper clubs, you might get to go for a family reunion or a wedding, or there was a lot of those kind of big life events moments that also happened there.
Let's go back to the phones. Next up, Everett in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Everett.
Hi there, Jarity. How are you doing today?
Good. And you used to work at the Highlander Supper Club?
I worked at the Highlander Supper Club starting either in 1965 or 1966, and I cannot remember. That's been a long time ago. And I worked, I was hired there about 3 days after they opened. So the Highlander was one famous for their steaks. They had at that time a 24-ounce T-bone. Now, can you imagine that?
No.
Could you eat it? I could eat one then.
Wow.
I can't now, but I could then. And they were also famous for, well, they had steaks, shrimp, scallops, different types of seafood, baked potatoes, and then hash browns. And that's what they served back then. Now, it was the Highlander was built, well, it was owned and operated by Bob and Leona McGurk. Now, I know Bob's deceased because he died quite a few years ago, but I don't know about his wife, Leona. I'm assuming she's deceased. And, of course, the Highlander hasn't been open for a few years, but I worked for him for about 7 years or something like that. Then my wife came along. She was a waitress, and that's where we met 50 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
Everett, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. And all right, Everett talked about that 24-ounce T-bone steak. That's kind of a thing about supper clubs, too. Very large portions, right?
Yes. Yeah, you can definitely plan to have leftovers, especially if you're thinking, you know, you're going to go have a few drinks in the bar, maybe have some onion rings or another appetizer. And then for the ones that have a relish tray, you usually end up with a side salad and a relish tray and then your meal. So it's quite a lot of food, but it's also kind of part of the experience that, you know, you're not getting in and out in 45 minutes. You're kind of taking your time and enjoying multiple courses over the course of the evening.
Well, and of course, dessert is a really important part of many supper club experiences as well. And you write about the ice cream cocktails that are served for dessert in a lot of supper clubs. Tell me about those.
Yes. Yeah. So, kind of the most iconic is probably the grasshopper. And so that's one that I think most people would recognize as kind of an after dinner ice cream drink that is vanilla ice cream, creme de menthe, and then creme de cacao. But there's also, you can get a pink squirrel, which I know a few places here in Iowa serve. And that one is ice cream with creme de cacao. And ruby red, I forget what the other ingredient is there, but that one's kind of a bright pink version of your grasshopper. There's some others that are maybe more coffee-based or more Kahlua-based. But yeah, really kind of just like a lightly boozy milkshake to finish your meal in case you still need something a little extra at the end.
And again, not every supper club, but a number of them. Let's get a few more memories in here. Wilbur's on the line in Sioux City. Hi, Wilbur.
Hello, Elise.
Hi.
The two that come to mind is one is the White House in St. Lucas, Iowa, which I think just closed after 100-some years.
Oh.
And the other one I wanted to ask you about, back in the mid-60s, I was going to Loras College, and the place to go back then was called Timmerman's. It was up on the cliff across the river there. And if that's still in business?
It is. Yep, across the river from Dubuque on the Illinois side. That one is still in business.
Spectacular view. First time ever I ever saw a crumb knife.
A what?
You guys know what a crumb knife is?
No, I don't.
No.
Okay. So you have, you know, they bring out your salads and your rolls and stuff. And then when you're eating the roll and the crumbs fall on the tablecloth.
Uh-huh.
Then the waiter comes and he scoops up in a tray.
Oh, nice.
They also lit your cigarettes too back then.
Oh, Wilbur, thanks so much.
That was service.
Yeah, thanks so much for the call. And it sounds like you need to take a road trip once the pandemic is over. All right, Megan, we only have about a minute and a half left. If people want to go to these supper clubs, I mean, one of the things I mentioned, they're kind of an endangered species. And one of the things that you found is that you were one of the youngest people at many of the supper clubs that you went to. So the clientele is aging and there may not be a clientele developing to take over. So you're encouraging young people to get out and enjoy these supper clubs. What's your advice for how to find them and how to get the most out of your meal?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, most metropolitan areas in Iowa have at least one or two that are an easy drive. They're a fun road trip. Right now, I think most of them are, all of them in the book are open. There are a few that are doing carry out only or who are only doing outdoor dining and have, you know, kind of a dining room set up in their parking lot. But I would say, you know, make sure you check before you go, and plan, even if it needs to be, you know, a modified at home, plan to make it an experience, have a fun cocktail, and really, yeah, just try something new.
And go hungry, I think, is yes, the biggest takeaway. All right. Megan Bannister, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yes, thanks so much for having me.
Megan Bannister is a travel writer, and she is the author of the new book, Iowa Supper Clubs. It's full of photos and the history of these unique restaurants that still can be found across the state of Iowa and throughout the Midwest. Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about the future of C.Y. Stevens Auditorium in Ames and Hancher Auditorium in Iowa City. Both of these beautiful auditoriums are under pressure because of budget cuts from the state and their parent institutions. We'll talk more in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.